Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to the Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast, and welcome back to that familiar feeling of the brave loss from Scottish rugby. It is 6 p.m. It's about an hour since Scotland finished their game against Ireland in the Six Nations. Scotland losing 27 points to 24. And a familiar feeling that we just repeatedly shot ourselves in both feet for 80 minutes to make sure that we didn't win a Six Nations match. I'm with Alan and Matt as ever to do a quick reaction pods. Alan, talk me through your emotions right now.
Just a broken man. Just sort of sat there. Freya's throwing up all over me. I'm watching Pois blowing up for full time. It was a tough moment, actually.
And Matt, have you been sick on yourself or anything like that?
I think I felt pretty sick that first 10 minutes in particular. That was the real height of my anger. And then I sort of went through the emotions of, you know, just acceptance, bargaining, then got a little bit excited and looked like we were coming back in. And then I went and started cooking for the last kind of 5 minutes because I thought, what's the point in anything anymore?
And that, I imagine, listeners, you've probably been through huge numbers of emotions as well. We put out a tweet about an hour ago asking for your comments, which is now sort of well over into the 80s and 90s, and we have an awful lot of emails, which we'll dive into some of those as we come to sort of look back on the game. I mean, where to start? Matt, you talked about there that opening 10 minutes, Scotland heavily under the cosh, ultimately going down 8-0, giving up a try and a penalty in fairly short order. That all felt very familiar, didn't it? And it kind of kept in that sort of classic Scotland vein for the whole game, didn't it?
Yeah, it was strange. I think that there were, on both fronts, there were a couple of things that just let Ireland into the game. And I think the first part was just our lack of intensity around the breakdown. It didn't really seem like we were challenging much. The defence in close to the ruck was pretty passive. And you know, when you got like the likes of Stander and Ryan and Furlong just doing the sort of pick and goes or one-off passes from the rucks, they were making ground so easily. And then when the ball did sort of go a bit wider, it seemed as if Scotland were trying to do a bit of a more passive kind of soft defence. And I'm not quite sure why that was a tactic. And it just, you know, leading up to the sort of first penalty allowed the likes of Lowe and Sexton just to really like dictate the pace of the game, get easy yards. And from that point onwards, really, we it didn't seem like we could get a foothold in the game.
It felt like the Scotland team sort of hit all the sort of classic notes. You know, we went behind really early on. First 10 minutes, we were 8-0 down. We then had, after the second half, Ireland kind of getting this, what we sort of felt at the time was this sort of unbridgeable lead, where, you know, Ireland then sort of grind you down. And then the final one was the restart with 4 minutes to go. We're drawing. We've got the momentum, and then somehow, I know it wasn't the restart itself, but within the sort of sphere of that restart, we managed to turn it over, and the man Sexton, to be fair, didn't bottle it and got the 3 points.
Yeah, there certainly were. It was the greatest hits tour, and it was just so familiar. One of the titles of our email inbox is Sick of This Shit. Which is quite interesting, and a lot of people calling for Tooney's head, and I don't really want to focus on that right now, although we might come back to it. I'll hit you with two stats, lads, that obviously put us on an enormous back foot. 15 turnovers within the game and a 25% success rate at the line out. I mean, Matt, I'll come to you. What is changed, and you know, where is that Scotland team, that extremely accurate and disciplined Scotland team from Twickenham, gone?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I think that what the Six Nations has shown, that playing at home without a home crowd can be like a pretty big challenge. And I was also thinking that Scotland having that off week because of the France game being postponed, Ireland admittedly only having Italy, but they just looked so much sharper in everything they were doing. And just from that sort of first Scotland carry where Sutherland went into some heavy traffic and was held up, from that point onwards, Scotland just weren't really getting any front football. Ireland were the ones going forward. And I think we'll probably talk about the referee, but I think that the vast majority of the marginal decisions / just some poor calls went the way of Ireland because they were going forward and, you know, sort of painting that clearer picture, as it were, for the referee. So just that lack of intensity, I think, and as I said, it's hard to say exactly where that's coming from, but just even the likes of someone we'll talk about as well, Finn, like, he just didn't really look hugely up for it. He was sort of shuffling around a bit, like, and I know that's what he's like, but it sort of seemed like the kind of game where you needed him to take it by the scruff of the neck, take charge and sort of take a bit of responsibility, I suppose.
Apart from Watson, who, as he has done both in the win against England and the loss against Wales, really just sort of cemented his place as being probably one of the best flankers in world rugby right now, I would say.
I think so. He was certainly the member of the pack that really stood up to be counted, not just his try, which was a freakish finish, and the ability to sort of get the ball to the ground with that many people trying to stop him. But also, I think just his carrying is so ferocious, and his ability to take a ball sometimes from a standing start and always make yards is something that not an awful lot of players are doing in world rugby at the moment. So I think in terms of, with Warren Gatland in the stands, Hamish Watson is probably the one Scot who has, continued to further his case towards touring this summer. You talked about Roman Pratt. Obviously, one big decision that he did give was Ireland's second try, which was a pick and go, and lots of heavy traffic, lots and lots and lots of bodies in the way, and he seemed to stick his head into the ruck for about 10 seconds and then appear to give it. I mean, Alan, how do you think that should be officiated? And do you think that, you know, obviously we're seeing it through a kind of one-eyed lens of a Scottish fan, but, you know, it didn't look like it should have been given without at least a referral.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the ruck beforehand, you know, the whole, I think the ruck in general actually today was a bit of a mess. And I think you know, the pitch in part had a little bit to play in that. But I was saying before the call, actually, the rock before that, Richie got down for the turnover. And I think you had a crocodile roll, a player off their feet, and potentially a headshot all in one sort of swift clear out from three Ireland players, which then got them quite clean ball to pop to tag Byrne. And actually, I think it was Sam Johnson, and I can't remember who the other person was, potentially Grant Gilchrist or Turner, I think it was someone with the red scrum cap, made actually quite a decent hit. And then tag Byrne, quite similar to what Watson sort of did, was just managed to ride that tackle and kind of got over the try line. And I was rewatching it after the match. And obviously, by the time tag Byrne was over the try line, there was about, I'd say, maybe three seconds where Romain Poix was standing looking at it. He then dived his head in, and it was almost an additional 10 seconds before Romain Poix popped up and gave the try. Now, completely fair that Romain Poix decided to put his head in the ruck. Okay, that's great. But my view is that if between tag Byrne going over the try line, if there is more than 10 seconds before you are able to give the try, it makes complete sense that you go to the TMO because it's such a long period of time. You know, ultimately, his head isn't in that ruck for 10 seconds. Like, you know, unless he's not sure that there's been a try. Like, I don't even know why his head's in there for that long. It's not like he's like searching around looking for the ball. You know, you put your head in, you're either gonna be able to see or you don't. So I just feel like, given where the game was at, given that Ireland were at the time, I think 4 or 5 points ahead, it just seemed, I sometimes think with a lot of refs, there's a bit of ego involved that they feel like they want to be the ref that gives the try on the field. And then, you know, obviously that you saw Johnny Sexton very quickly, you know, he knows how it all works. He very quickly got the conversion over. You see one replay. And from that replay, I think it depends what the question was. If the question had gone up to the TMO, try yes or no, I think that comes back no from that one replay.
Yeah, I agree. I suppose like the decision making process should be taken without the context of the game. Like, every decision should be treated exactly the same regardless of the score or the closeness. But surely with a game that is so tight at a pivotal point in the match, like, I don't think it reflects badly on Romain Poix if he's bloody put his head in the middle of this like melee of players and come out and just say, look, I can't see. You don't know what you don't know, you know? And then I just don't understand why in that intervening period when that replay was shown, that's still where, you know, even Jamie Heaslip was saying, I don't think that's put down. The TMO doesn't say, and maybe they were, say to him, Romain, you might want to have another look at that because we're not sure.
But then I don't think there would have been, I mean, again, I don't know what the TMO sees, but they didn't even really show the replay until after or just as Sexton had the kick. So, but obviously Romain Poix very quickly kind of shuffled play along.
Do you think because he put his head in the ruck, he felt like that was sort of enough to award the try?
Again, it goes back to this point that he had his head in the ruck for 10 seconds and he popped up and he said, I've seen the ball on the ground. Now, he either put his head in the ruck and he sees the ball on the ground, or something has happened in that 10 seconds that has gone from him not seeing the ball to him then seeing the ball in the ruck. And I don't understand what kind of change, given basically all the action is stalled and he's not moving. So I just found it a completely sort of ridiculous circumstance where, again, I don't know exactly what Romain Poix was looking at for such a long period of time, what changed in that intervening period. And then again, just the fact that I think you then compare it to the Watson try, which was such a clearer
try. Exactly.
Versus tag Byrne, Poix again said, "I have seen the ball grounded, but I'm going to check it." So you've got almost two two similar situations where almost the kind of whole kind of situation is kind of ended. Poix has then seen the ball grounded, and in one situation has gone to the TMO and the other is not. And I think, again, it's just that lack of consistency, which is a real frustration.
Yeah. And I don't want to... We shouldn't focus too much on the referee, because Scotland made so many mistakes and weren't at the races, all these things that we've talked about. But at the end of the day, it's a 27-24 loss. Scotland are playing against a team who are ranked above us in the world. It's a day where, you know, it's not a day for like running rugby. There's mistakes being made. It's going to hinge on a lot of these penalty decisions. So I think to call for not just consistency, but quality of decision is not an outrageous thing, because I think if you look back at the tape, I think that a lot of the breakdown calls were going in Ireland's favour. There's a video that we just tweeted of Kelleher flying in off his feet with a kind of chicken wing elbow, actually completely similar to O'Mahony's that got red carded for. Doesn't hit Cummings in the face, but hits him to an extent. He has to go off with an injury. No one says anything about that. It's just the only Scotland thing that... we just need a little bit of luck. So it is just frustrating.
The only thing I will say, and I completely agree on the Kelleher point, is Cummings almost definitely is giving away a penalty at that ruck. It's 100% off his feet playing the ball, but I agree in the same sense that Kelleher could have very easily, at a minimum, have been yellow carded for that behaviour.
Mm.
I'm just looking at Gregor Townsend's comments on that Tagburn try. He said, very similar to you actually, Alan, so you know, maybe you should consider a role as the next Scotland head coach. He says, it was very similar to Hamish's, and that was referred to the TMO. I saw one replay and it didn't look like he got the ball down. He might have 10 seconds after, but you just hope these things get referred to the TMO if there is any doubt. Townsend goes on to say that the challenge was us putting ourselves behind by 14 points. We put in a huge effort to get it back to 24-24, but the work on is making sure we don't give big leads to the opposition. It's very, very reminiscent of the big lead we gave to Ireland in the Rugby World Cup a couple of years ago.
Hashtag tuning out Alan in. Get it going.
Hashtag tuning out Alan in. Well, Alan, you did say that Finn was going to be the first Scotland try scorer, so I don't know if you actually put any money on that.
I was considering whether to put Finn any time try scorer or first try scorer in the match, and I ended up putting on actually first try scorer in the match. So, frustratingly, my Betfair account is again hit zero, which is an all too similar feeling. But you know, I think, you know, we've sort of talked a bit about the ref. I think you've tweeted it, and BBC Sport have obviously picked it up. I think you go back to it, 15 turnovers, and you know, we talked pre the England game about George Turner's arrows, and I know we got a little bit of heat because we criticised George Turner for Glasgow, how potentially kind of erratic his arrows can be. No one's questioning how good he is in the loose. But today, you know, I think there was 8 lineouts and we lost 6, and even the 2 that we won, it wasn't like clean ball.
Yeah.
Yeah. We just didn't have a platform from there. Did you think it was interesting that, I mean, I think, I'm just looking at it now. Sorry, while I'm just get my stats right. Turner was given 65 minutes. Do you think, I mean, I suppose we are maybe feeling the, you know, the downside of the fact that Turner is the third choice Scotland hooker for a reason, and Dave Cherry is the fourth choice Scotland hooker for a reason. So do you think, I mean, it was pretty clear to me that the lineout was malfunctioning at 50 minutes, but we persisted with Turner for 15. Do you think that's Tooney not trusting Cherry to give, you know, 35?
Yeah, possibly. It's always hard to tell, isn't it, that I think when the lineout does go awry, the back almost stops with the hooker, and you don't know whether the calling wasn't right, or obviously Ireland have a very good line out jumpers, and it seems as if Henderson and Ryan were spoiling really effectively. Yeah. But yeah, I was surprised that clearly something wasn't working in the line out, and you know, I think that Townsend was clearly quite happy to make some changes fairly early on, but Turner wasn't the one to to come off. So, yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah, and some of those changes forced, some of them not so. You talked earlier, Matt, that Finn obviously didn't have one of his better games despite dotting down for a try in the first half. And we played essentially half an hour with Hogg at 10.
Probably a little bit less critical of Finn, I think. I thought at moments, especially in attack, when he was kind of getting those short passes or those really flat passes going, I potentially don't think he looked that up for it, but you know, that I think that's just generally his style. I did think the Scotland attack was starting to look like it was firing.
But the problem with the attack is that it was all happening in between the tens.
Yes.
And when you've got such a close game, like, you know, I think we praise Russell for the fact that he'll approach every game in the same way, it appears at least. He will try things, he wants to go out and win the game playing positive rugby, but...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Surely after, you know, 35 minutes, 40 minutes of that game, you realize, right, okay, this is a bit of a dogfight. The pitch isn't right. We're not winning any of our lineouts. Breakdown's not really going for us. Like the 50-50 plays, I just don't know if they're the right way forward. Maybe not just the 50-50s, but doing all this nice attack within our own half, which we did at the start of the second half, and then we got turned over, and yeah. Ireland go and punish us. Like, and you contrast that with Sexton, who I think ran the Ireland attack really well, but at points was like, you know what? I don't necessarily want the ball right now. I'm just going to bang up a Gary Owen. And Ireland got a lot of change out of that, actually. I think that it would have been nice to see Russell on a few more occasions trying to play the game down in their half. It's not all his fault, but, you know, he's like arguably the best player in the team and one of the biggest leaders. So I think it's fair to expect more.
No, and I think you're right. I think Sexton used that when the Ireland attack appeared to be stalling, he used that bomb and he was actually pretty pinpoint accurate with it. And I think Henshaw in particular is just so great at challenging for that high ball and not aiming to catch it, just aiming to like pam it back, which is actually insanely hard to deal with if you're like Stuart Hogg or a Doohan. And I think the few times that we put bombs up, either from Finn or we were box kicking, I think a lot of them just went a little bit too far. And I think Hugo Keenan dealt with it pretty well, but he didn't have even close to the same amount of pressure that a lot of the Scotland backs had when they were sort of going up for it.
I think a lot of those 50-50 aerial battles, Ireland definitely won that aerial battle. Hugo Keenan looked very assured. Keith Earls took a couple of very critical ones. And I guess maybe just that bounce of the ball, we weren't quite as dominant in the air where we were against England and got an awful lot of change change from it. Could I nudge you guys towards some positives? Hugh Jones, this guy, outside centre, looks like he can play a bit of rugby.
Where has this guy come from?
Where has this 13 come from? He's absolutely sprung onto the stage.
Well, his offload as well for Doohan. Yeah. Well, I don't know if you guys were. I was screaming at the TV because I'm sure that Doohan could have just reached out and scored a try in that moment.
Yeah,
totally.
And actually, it didn't actually match in him because quite soon afterward, Watson scored and we had a try closer to the post. But yeah, it was a bit of a weird. I don't know if Doohan just wasn't, I think he wasn't really facing the line just because of where the tackle was. And I don't know if he just wasn't 100% clear where the try line was in relation to himself. But yeah, Hugh Jones, it was Hogg. James Lowe obviously was just held in a little bit by Hogg's line.
Mm. Yeah.
And to be fair, I think Lowe's tackle was like pretty weak. It's the sort of tackle I used to make in the outside channels. Sort of just go a little bit high and just get like shrugged off. But at the end of the day, Hugh Jones hit the line hard. And then they put the ball into one hand. He was only going to do one thing. And he can change that direction at speed better than most players. And did Keenan in pretty class.
The thing is, I don't think Harris necessarily like had a bad game either. It's not as if you sort of see Hugh Jones do what he does there and say, right, it's a direct swap. But you do sort of see Hugh Jones in that kind of form and see what the flashes he's had for Glasgow this season and think, how can we afford to not include that attacking talent somewhere? But maybe, considering there are question marks over his defence, like the bench is a great place for him to be.
I did see a few people saying Jones 12. I'm calling it. I've said it. Jones Harris. Although, to be fair, I actually thought Sam Johnson did his job well.
Mm.
I was going to say, I thought Sammy was pretty decent today.
It was maybe like hard to tell in a game which is so stop-start. I still don't quite see what the strategy is in attack 10, 12, 13.
Yeah.
Like I think Sam Johnson is a really great rugby player and so is Harris, but maybe in terms of making that back line tick, it doesn't quite work. But I mean, that's like a secondary issue to the rest of the kind of the terrible bits and pieces that we saw today in the game. I'm struggling for positives beyond, like, I don't think anyone had a really terrible game. But just most players seem to make like two or three key mistakes at just absolutely crucial times that killed us. And I wonder if that slightly speaks to a lack of leadership.
I guess we're looking sort of the pack. I think you're right. I think you sort of take Watson out of the conversation for a bit. There's no one actually within that sort of 1 to 6 and 8 who had a really terrible game. But I think potentially most of them were marginally beaten by their opposite man on the day. Yeah.
I'd say it's more than marginal, though. I'd say like, I just think whenever Stander plays against Scotland, he makes his opposite man look like a child. And I think that Fagerson was manful and he was aggressive, but Stander's getting like 10 meters with every carry. Ian Henderson was like bossing. Like Cummings is great, but he probably is a bit lightweight. And then, like, even, you know, Furlong was on great form as well. Even like Keane Healy, it seems, can just deal with those Scotland players physically.
Mm. Matt Ferguson, 10 runs for 36 meters. Stander, 18 carries for 23. So he made more. Just in that sort of heavy traffic type. I'm flicking through the stats at the moment. I suppose frustrating things, particularly in the second half where we had more territory than Ireland. I think, as you say, nobody had, you know, a 2 out of 10 game, but the number of times we were winning penalties, because Ireland gave away 9 penalties as well. Scotland only gave away 11. So there was an awful lot of penalties being given away at that breakdown. And there's a couple of things, you know, if you think about Finn missing that kick to touch with a penalty, you know, granted there's no guarantee we would have won the line out, but that is good work in the middle of the park by Scotland getting the penalty. And then, you know, we get a little bit of pressure and then pressure is off. or when we've kicked to the corners and then lost lineouts. It's just that inability to put the two things together is chronic. And as you say, Ireland are just they're a very savvy team, and yeah, it's just so frustrating. We got what we deserved, didn't we?
The frustration with, I think, that obviously that penalty count, you say 15-9.
11-9
is actually when you look at Ireland's attack, it's so limited.
Yeah.
And the issue is, so I was actually if you look at, you know, meters run, Scotland's 320 to 220, clean breaks 5-2, and then defenders beaten 22-6, and obviously two of Ireland's six was Tadhg Furlong beating George Turner and Finn Russell.
Yeah. That was class, to be fair.
That was class. So the frustration is actually, it's, you know, Ireland are just sort of actually not doing anything of their own to really break down that Scottish line. You know, they're obviously gaining those sort of marginal yards, but actually, if Scotland just are aggressive in defence and don't do anything stupid, I actually think Scotland should be quite comfortable with Ireland. It's just that we're giving them those platforms. And, you know, there's an argument to say some of them were quite sort of potentially, say, is sort of unfair. I think actually the penalty that Ireland got in the lead up to the Tadhg Byrne try, I actually thought should have been given the other way. It should have been reversed for not releasing the player. But again, we just know what Ireland are like when they get into that 22. They're so dangerous and they can just grind you down. And they're so hard to sometimes get possession back off that we're giving them those opportunities to then score those sort of tries that we know they can do against the Scotland team.
And where do you think this leaves the Scotland team? Obviously, we're now three games in. Two games to go. It's the next weekend, and then still not confirmed, but we expect to play France probably the following weekend. We can no longer win the tournament. Today was kind of the fork in the road, wasn't it? Win and we're still in it. Lose and, you know, we're probably staring down the barrel of a 2-win Six Nations, 3 if we can go to Paris and get a win. I'm going to ask the question. We've had 2 or 3 emails calling for Tooney's head. Matt, is Gregor Townsend still the person to be taking this Scotland team forward?
Yeah, he is. He still has by far the highest win percentage in the professional era, I think. And I think on average there have been more good days than bad with Townsend. Also, I'm just not quite sure who would come in. But it does seem as if there are some familiar failings, which, to be fair, have probably been there for a long time under Scottish rugby rather than just Townsend. But it's difficult because that is pretty much the strongest team that Townsend can select. Maybe some people on the bench who are missing.
Yeah, it's not the strongest bench, but you're right.
But you know, absent Xander Sigurðsson, like there's not many other excuses. So if Townsend can't, you know, turn Six Nations into 3 victories, 4 victories, rather than the kind of 2 that we've become accustomed to, then, you know, you do have to ask those. I think it is fair to ask those questions. I don't think on the back of this, just to be clear, that we should be getting rid of him. But it is maybe like a data point that points to something a bit bigger in the future.
Absolutely, and obviously Italy next.
Just a quick note on that.
Yeah, of course.
I think you do have to. So I'm very much not tuning out, and I think you got to look at the sort of base level from what they're working of. You know, ultimately 2/3 of that team of that 23 for Scotland today are playing for Edinburgh and Glasgow, 2 teams that are both kind of 4th or 5th in their sort of respective conferences. And the top 2 teams in both Conference A and Conference B of the Pro 14 are Leinster and Ulster, Munster and Connacht. So I think ultimately you kind of got to give Tooney a little bit of a break, and the fact that he's not actually got the best pieces to play with. And I think actually with what he's been given, those results against England, Wales, I don't understand Wales rugby team at all, but and Ireland, I actually think he's doing a pretty good job. And I think to your point, people forget like the history of Scottish rugby and even sort of Cotter's time for a little bit. The one thing with Cotter, and we talk about this, people sometimes forget the end rather than the beginning. And the issue with Cotter is he had that final, he had the quarterfinal and then he had that final Six Nations where he won the three matches. People don't remember the Six Nations before where we lost every single game.
and we got absolutely pumped by Ireland at home as well.
Yeah. And the 65-pointer at Twickenham.
And I think, again, you've got to, you know, Tooney has the, oh, remember, Tooney has the best record of any Scotland coach, the best win record. And I'd say he's operating with two pro teams that are struggling for form versus you look at Ireland, what Andy Farrell has. I actually think Andy Farrell's doing a pretty poor job when you look at the quality that he has across those four teams.
Yeah, I do agree with that. There does seem to be this thing with Wales that when they come together in the camp, they can like put aside the fact that their regions are doing pretty averagely and like develop this kind of Wales team ethos, which I don't know how you do that because they had it under Gatland. They seem to now have it under Pivac as well. But that's arguably the challenge for Townsend. I think the other point is, as you say, Townsend has the best record, but I think it's reasonable to ask how much further he can take this team. And if Scottish rugby wants to continue to get better, which I think over the last sort of 10, 15 years, it slowly has done, the national team, then like maybe that does get to a point where you say to Townsend, like, look, thanks, you've done a great job, but you've reached the end of your journey. Like, you've done as much as you possibly can, and we need to consider someone else.
But I guess, you know, who else do you think is taking that team to the next level outside of potentially a Warren Gatland?
Well, yeah, I know. That's what I was saying. Like, it's really difficult.
Gatland 2022, that would blow up Scottish rugby Twitter.
What about Gatland, Scott Robertson, and that Richie Gray like breakdown coach, and Matt Proudfoot, the South Africa coach who played for Scotland,
and then actually we'll just end up with Rob Howley as head coach.
Rob Howley is head coach, and Scott Johnson comes back as chief executive of Scottish
rugby. To be fair, that would be great for our engagement. I would.
Oh yeah, that is true.
The narrative would just be too much to deal with. Unbelievable. Well, as I say, we've got Italy next week. Either of you guys foreseeing any issues with that? You know, putting aside today's massive disappointment, Italy have been pretty fucking woeful this whole tournament. Surely that's got to be a pretty solid win for Scotland, and perhaps, you know, a benefit of getting back on the horse now that we've got to go to France in a couple of weeks.
Surely, like,
surely.
I don't want to tempt fate, but I'm very confident of winning that game. It's not on a Sunday again, is it?
Sunday. No, it's meant to be Super Saturday. Yeah. I think it's the early kickoff, I think.
Oh, good. So we can get it out of the way and then actually enjoy watching some rugby.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a weird one with Italy. Like, it really does feel, you know, you look at yesterday's game, and it's starting to feel like they are closer to the I think they call it, is it the Europe Championship now? The one sort of below.
Yeah.
Than they are to the other five teams. I always feel like Scotland almost kind of valid, because Scotland was so poor for kind of maybe sort of 2015, before 2015, that the argument never really washed that Italy could leave, but Scotland have just now made that leap forward and now can operate with the other sort of four teams. And I was never actually sort of particularly pro, I think, the Italy, the promotion and relegation sort of argument, but I sometimes start to feel now that the gap is getting so big, and I don't I know Italy have had a couple of maybe good like under 20 players coming through, but there isn't enough really to make you think that they're going to be able to make that jump. And what it must be now, the last time that Italy won a game potentially might be that 2015 Six Nations when we lost to the Montevern.
Yeah, it was.
Italy must hate it as well. Just literally getting pumped every knowing that everyone in their fantasy team is making their captain at least a player who's playing against them all the time, a winger, to make sure that you get those points.
Dave, do you want to do a quick update on the Thistle fantasy scores?
I absolutely can, yeah. So the top four, there has been another change at the top of the leaderboard. The mysteriously named OB is at the top, has taken over Kath, who hangs in there at second. Early runners and rider Ben Dover is at third. And a young man called Matt Hanney of the Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast is sitting just teasingly at fourth. I mean, Matt, will you re-donate the T-shirt to the cause if you do go on to win it?
Well, so far, you failed to mention that in that top three, that the OB is one of our good friends, that the other person is also a good friend, and then it's me. So I don't know if it looks
just
like
to
a fit
confirm,
so far.
We don't know Bendover.
We don't know Bendover is, to be fair. So
we're
people might
like
think it's some
SRU
sort of stitch
sort of
up.
Recruitment policy at the moment, isn't it? Jobs for the boys at the top of the Thistle Fantasy League.
Exactly.
Well, we'll have to see whether the T-shirt will have to. I run the idea of Kath and asked her if she was really excited about winning the T-shirt, and she said, "I don't care about the T-shirt." So you know, we might have to re-donate that to another prize winner at some stage.
I think if you deserve the tea.
Exactly. If you don't care about the T-shirt, then can we? We're the administrators. Can we kick people out of the league? That'd be quite funny. I don't know. We can do
whatever we want. But anyway, let's wrap this up. That's been a sort of tight, sort of 35 minutes of ranting. We hope that you have found that as a cathartic outpouring of emotion. We will be back to preview the Italy game later in the week, and keep in touch with us on social media. That's at Thistle Rugby Pod on Twitter, Thistle_Rugby_Pod on Instagram, and subscribe to our newsletter. So that's Substack, Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. We're going to draft something up tonight, so that'll be with you as well. So make sure you subscribe to that to get it in your inbox. But until then, we are back where we always were, disappointed about being Scottish rugby fans. Thank you very much.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.